Ben,
Jay.
We're back. Prelim finals done and dusted, which means we've got a week off footy, which probably doesn't bode too well for too many people this week. But we know our grand finalists now. We know that that's the Demons and the Bulldogs. First time since whatever it is, 1954. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ben. Is that right?
I think it was 54. Yeah.
When they last played in a grand final.
You know what I noticed, by the way, Jay? Nobody corrects us ever. On these.
Well, yeah, because I can only assume nobody's listening.
Like, no one's listening. Well, if people are listening and they're not replying, then I can actually just, I'm just thinking now, I can just start making some. I think it was 1976 the last time they played in a raining, I'm getting Tom Brown areas there. What's
the Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos.
Hit me with it. Sorry for interrupting there.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, we will give the, given the fact that we've, you know, got two shows before the ball is bounced on grand final day, we will do a bit of a deep dive into the grand final next week and all those sort of things. So, forgive us, I guess, if you know you aren't going to get that in-depth match analysis that we know that people come here for. You're not going to get that this week. That will come next week, and we will be doing a bit of a conference call. We'll be checking in with our Melbourne and our Bulldogs fans on the ground. So
yeah,
just not on the ground in Perth. They're locked up in their homes. But
you know what I do like about this show, Jay, and
just the one thing. Just the one thing. What I do like, the one.
There is one thing that just stood out just now. You just apologised in advance for saying that we are sorry that there's obviously 2 weeks before the granny, and that, you know, the content, you know, you can only make up so much content. But the fact that we've come out and said that, I love it, because at the moment we're still 10 and 11 days away from the grand final, and the stuff that is coming out from the AFL media is bonkers already. There's clashes between a royal blue and a light blue, which they played 3 fucking weeks ago. There was no issue then. We're already creating all this buzz and drama. That's just not there. But we're not about that.
I do like how they jumped on that pretty early, though. Like, instead of then having 3 episodes of AFL 360 where they talk about it, they just said, no, they're just wearing their home jumpers. It's fine.
Yeah. Like, I wonder if Jared Waitley would want the blue to be 15% lighter.
There'd have to be. I'm sure there'd be something that would be mind-boggling, just how he said that Stephen Martin wasn't going to play last week after he had Luke Beveridge on the show, and he just completely got it wrong, even though Luke Beveridge said that he was a chance to play. He said, no, what I'm getting from this is that he won't be playing, and it just wasn't what he said. And then he played and the Dogs won, so he'll play again. So Demons and Dogs fans, don't despair. We will obviously be chatting about the prelims throughout this episode. But, before we get to it, we're sort of famous for our grand final episodes now, I think. They've sort of become a bit of folklore. So we will get to that. But we do sort of have to, I guess, start, you know, we sort of ramped up on the socials last week that you and I, there were two games and we tipped differently. And as the wry smile just starts to creep in over your face, you went 2 from 2, Ben. How does it feel?
2 for 2. Pretty good. Pretty good. I usually forget what my tips have been on this show, but a good friend of mine, JB, shout out. He actually messaged me after the Dogs win on Saturday night and said 2 for 2 on the Magoos. And then that made me remember that I actually did tip 2 for 2. So sometimes I say things on here, and sometimes it might be tipping against yourself, and sometimes it might be just tipping with more of my heart. The Doggies was definitely heart, for sure. And
For Uncle Paul.
For Uncle Paul, the Oracle, because he's since that
phone call, nailed it.
Yeah. He has nailed it. Everyone who was shocked on Twitter and everything else saying, I really didn't expect this to happen against Port Adelaide. Well, my Uncle Paul, he called this weeks ago.
He knew.
Port Adelaide was the team that he was least worried about. He was least concerned.
And he was so correct, like hauntingly correct. And
hold on, we'll have to get him on in the grand final show, I think.
Absolutely. We'd be rude not to, because he's going to tell us exactly what's going to happen. But so you getting 2 from 2 and getting all the adulation obviously means that I went 0 from 2, which is not a forlorn concept for me when it comes to footy tipping, seemingly, for someone who watches so much of it and seemingly, you know, consumes a lot of football content. Footy tipping in itself is something I'm very poor at. And there's a bit of salt in the wound that on Friday night at 10:08 p.m., which was approximately 15 minutes left in the last quarter when Melbourne were up by 90 points against Geelong, Mum just texted me, your tip not looking good. Like, quite obviously, they've been getting pulverized all night. You didn't have to wait for 15 minutes, and then it obviously got worse the next day because I was very confident in Port Adelaide. I knew Geelong would be a little bit of an upset, but I also I really thought that they could win, but I thought Port Adelaide were just certainties the way they played the week before. And they'll have a little bit of soul searching to do. And it was interesting that the All Australian centre half back that was a better option than Jacob Wiedering in that side. And I know that, you know, these teams are the source of much debate and wasted air. But Alir, you know, the Dogs played him very well. Shacky played him very well. And they shut down that part of Port Adelaide's game and you know, provided that that blueprint defensively, how to stop one of Port Adelaide's biggest weapons, and then just absolutely demolished them. So it was incredible to see the two results. I sort of couldn't. I'm not sure if you watched both games. We probably should put that to you as well.
I did, actually. I watched both. So I couldn't do it 2 weeks in a row. I wasn't going to do that to you.
Well, we did have a member of the Magoos community who came through on Instagram, who said that it was shocking that you watched Ocean's 11, and that we should take suggestions from the listeners as to what movie you have to watch instead of the grand final, which would be absolutely brilliant. I think it was my old man who sent that through.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's awesome. Yeah.
And so maybe you might just see on our Instagram page at the Magoos.
As long as it's got the remakes of the Oceans franchise, then any other movie, please. Or Ghostbusters remake.
Well, yeah, we might open that up and see what you've got to pop in the old VCR come Saturday week at whatever time it is, 7:15 our time. But before we get stuck into, you know, we do have our great mate Rudy joining us shortly, who's going to help us sort of, I guess, run the eye over Geelong and some of his thoughts in footy, see if he's got any scoops for us. And while we're talking, you know, entertainment, I did have a new TV recommendation for the people out there. I've actually got two, and I wasn't sure if I should stagger them, but, you know, I'm not sure how many episodes we're going to do post-footy season and all those sort of things, so I thought that I've watched them recently, I can vouch for them in the now, so I'm going to give them both to you, and they're both in very different walks of genres of television, if you will. So the first one, which is on Netflix, is Clickbait, and I'm not sure if you've watched this, Ben.
No, I haven't.
No, so it's a bit of a thriller, twists and turns, murder sort of mystery sort of thing, and an 8-episode season, which I consumed all in 24 hours.
Very well done.
Which, yeah, so, and actually, no, someone else did that too, so shout out to them. It's not a fantastic program, but it's worth watching because of the twists and stuff, so
yep.
Do recommend. And the other one that you just have to watch is... in red underline is Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso. I've seen all these memes and stuff, and I'm not going to lie, it's gone all way over my head.
No, you haven't seen the show, that's why.
Well, yeah, it makes sense. I keep asking who this Ted Lasso fella is.
Yeah.
So what's he fun about?
He is an American who gets a job coaching a English Premier League club, and just all that sort of goes into that. And it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. So well written, so clever, bit emotional, bit funny. It's everything. And it's sport based too, so which we love. So that is an absolute must watch. And I know that on Twitter I saw that loyal Magoos listener Callum Pohl, he's big on Ted Lasso too. So I know I'm not the only one. It's a worldwide phenomenon, but that's where I've been spending my time, Ben, outside of sporting pursuits on the television. That's
probably the only thing that you're doing outside, because as I look at you now, and I realise now that this was last week also in the background on Zoom, but that's got to be, you've got a plant just to your left. And I've been admiring that plant for over a week now. It is, from here, I'm obviously on camera, is this a fake plant? Because it is the most pristine, well-looked-after indoor plant. And this could probably segue into the most Melbourne of all-time chats. But what a beautiful plant, Jack. Have you been, what are you doing here?
Thank you. It's got absolutely nothing to do with me. The lovely Rachel takes care of all the indoor plants. It's a bit of a, it'd be beyond hobby of hers. It's like a more project. Than, I don't know. More than a hobby, because she's very into it. She knows a lot about them. We've got, it's like Jurassic Park in here. Sometimes there's that many different leaf things. But this one, I'm led to believe, is the pride and joy. The fiddle leaf fig, I think it's called, Ben. So I know that people listening to this, you know, we're talking about a plant that you can't see. So, it's quite a striking plant that's in pretty good nick at the moment. And I've actually learned that you shake them.
You shake the plant.
Yeah, you wobble them, and you might be able to hear that sound effect. That's how you help them in some way.
Like an earthquake test. What?
I don't know. I think I must aerate them or wake them up or something, because this is where I work. This is where we record from. I'm sort of working in the same position, and a lot of people talk to me about the plant, and I believe they're quite valuable too, the old fiddle leaf fig. So
you might have to start not having it in the background if it's people start not maybe know where your address is, if they're worth that kind of dosh.
Yeah, that'd be nasty, wouldn't it? But yeah, I will definitely pass on to Rach. I'm assuming she doesn't listen to the show, so I'll have to.
A lot of assumption. I think you've got to give yourself benefit of the doubt. Your mum's text you, she listens to the show because she said your tip was wrong. Your dad's DMing the show, just saying, I've got to watch a certain
there's two movie. Listeners.
And I reckon Rach must, because she might have even possibly put this plant there just to see it in the background and hopefully have something that we talk about. But well done, Rachel. That's hats off. That is beautiful.
Yeah, it's actually not the biggest talking point in our house this week, actually, Ben. And we do talk around this time of year about the players that aren't featuring in September due to injuries. And we've obviously got Stephen May thinks he's going to play, but under a little bit of an injury cloud. Cody Waitman didn't play in the prelim due to concussion, but they think the extra week and he'll be all good. And there is always those hard luck stories. Obviously, Josh Bruce is out with his ACL, finished fifth in the Coleman, even though Jason Dunster said the other night that what I love about these two teams is that it's their full lists and they're fighting fit. Didn't make a lot of sense that he left out the guy who was, the leading goal kicker for one of the clubs. But we've had a little bit of an injury in the house, and our beloved Pooch, the dog, Bailey, she's torn her ACL. It's a little bit of a nightmare for the poor girl. She just celebrated her sixth birthday, and she's booked in for surgery to repair the ACL. So she's a bit flat.
She's after chasing the Uber driver from last week.
Yeah, who knows? She's still pretty okay within herself day to day, but yeah, she's got a bit of a journey ahead of her, the young girl. So, I mean, we're not going to, but we could start a GoFundMe if anyone's interested out there.
Suggested. I don't know how far, to be completely honest. I don't know how good would go. I'm chucking
it. Can't go well. I mean, yeah.
I saw you're 20 for a Chauncey Billups player card too. So that's
not Yeah. So just transfer
losing,
it all.
I'm losing money on this show.
Transfer it all in one lump sum would be fine. But yeah, so in a couple of weeks we'll provide an update on how she's going. The surgery is not till post grand final. So
how does she go pre surgery? She wrapped up in anything or just hobbling along?
Nah, she only hobbles after she runs. So we're obviously not running her anymore. But yeah, like she can still go for 10-minute walks just to keep her outside. Yeah. And then I think it's like 3 or 4 weeks post op. She's like needs to be in like a little pen sort of thing and kept quite restricted. So that should be a hoot. Can't wait for that. But that's all that's sort of happening around here. It's plants and dogs. Do you have any updates from your room? It sort of looks like you've got a bit more light this week.
I've got more light.
Last week I was talking to a dark screen.
Well, I was committed to the cause last week because we'd started recording when it was light and it got dark and I had the light off to begin with. But of course, I've just kept that professionalism going. And just by the end of it, I was literally recording in the dark. You weren't sure if I was there or not, which, just adds a little element. There's not much happening on our end. We're actually we've got Molly's dog over at the moment. We're joint custody with her parents. She's technically Molly's dog, but at the same time, Molly is also an only child, just come from home too. So we thought it might be not the best to steal both away from them. So
you said you've got joint custody. Was there a bit of a dispute? Was there any juicy fallout?
I've been pretty medial with everything. I'm not the one sort of pushing for either way, but no, there has been no disputes. It's sort of just come and go, and she likes it. She likes it here. She's a good dog.
Yeah.
7-year-old Labrador. She's asleep right next to me, actually. So.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. But people listening are like, hang on a minute. This is going a bit off track, and I must bring it up before we speak to Rudy. We've recorded a few episodes in a row now, Jake, and the first episode we deep dive into Essendon. And we said we'd come back to Carlton. We thought it would be best we'd come back to Carlton when they have announced a coach. It's about 750 days later. There's still no coach at Carlton. I think people are wanting to hear your opinion on what may be going on, and what are your thoughts and what's happening.
I just think that they've got a plan. I think they've got a plan, and it still centres around Clarkson, to be honest. And whether or not, you know, they can convince him is one thing. And in the meantime, they're going to keep asking and interviewing other people to keep the process moving. But I think that if any time Alistair Clarkson turns around and says, right, you've got me, I'm doing it, then they'll take that.
That doesn't pan well for a lot of relationships when someone's trying to go for that 10 and that 10 saying, hey, I don't really want to date you. And then you're not settling for the sixes and sevens when you know you probably should go on the six or the seven, because that 10 might be just pulling you along.
Yeah, you do have to, I think, commit to one way or the other. But I think that when it's as rare as a coach like Clarkson's available, you make the concessions, I think, is and I mean, you know, there's no rush on them anyway. I mean, I'm assuming they can make list decisions. They'll probably have in 2 weeks, you'd like to think that it'll be all sorted at least. You know, they're interviewing people now. Jan Syracuse, Voss, Kingsley, I think have all been interviewed or about to be interviewed. So there is still enough going on there that, I mean, yeah. The process is sort of underway. Whether or not how we got to this point is probably a whole other discussion, because seemingly they didn't really have a better option lined up like many sort of people thought, that it was going to be out Teague and in Clarkson or in line or whoever it was going to be. Seemingly that it wasn't set in stone. So it makes you think that the relationship with Teague, he was not an option at all, because then you think that they'd give him another year and then go after Clarkson next year. But it might have gotten to that point with a few of them that they just couldn't do that. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm sort of neither. When we had our deck built out here, I remember that the builder saying to me, now, just remember, let's not judge things halfway through. Let's wait until they're finished, and then we can see how it all comes up and when you see it all come together. And I feel like I'm happy to do that with Carlton at this stage.
Sure, he was talking about the deck.
Yeah. I'm happy to judge the finished product and who they present as the coach, and see if it was worth all the hysteria rather than sort of go off half-baked at the moment.
I do like that analogy with the deck.
However, it wasn't an analogy. He was building a deck.
He was building it, but I like the way that you've brought it. It's still an analogy from your point of view.
That's true. Yeah. Carlton. It's also fair. Yeah.
Which I do agree with. There is one thing, and I honestly could be completely wrong. This is just something that I saw and just thought, hang on, that doesn't, like, I'm not sure how much sense this makes. So you're talking about like list management and that sort of thing. How much decision making does a head coach have on the playing list? Because obviously it's been a a few weeks now without a coach, but you can't keep players in the lurch on who's meant to be signing, who may not be signing, that sort of thing, which I totally get. But then you've got players who, like, for example, this is what I thought of it when Ed Curno just signed a one-year deal yesterday, which is awesome. And I really love Ed and that sort of thing. But what if Ed, Clarkson was really contemplating and someone like Ed wasn't actually in his mind in the 22 going forward, that sort of thing.
Mm.
And he's now just taken up a spot because of that indecision.
I guess that there's a lot of independence in terms of the list management team, and then seemingly the coach might not have a lot of say, but they're obviously like similar departments that have to, you know, like keep the wheels turning because, yeah, you're right, you know, you couldn't just leave everyone unsigned or, you know, there will be people that get delisted, but they're obviously trying to do as much as they can as late as they can. And, you'd obviously like, you know, the trade period starts early October, I think. So you'd like to think that they'd be settled by then because, yeah, you've got to have some say in the list you're building. But I would suggest that, a person like Ed Curnow, they won't be signing any, like, fringe players in this sort of, like, and Ed Curnow, you might be able to view as that, but I think you played every game year and in your best, you know, in a really good side, he probably becomes a fringe player. But, yeah, there would have had to have been, I guess, you know, that because it also gets to the point of, well, like, if I'm not playing here, I'm retiring, so do I stay fit? What am I doing sort of thing? And so, yeah, it would make those decisions very, very hard. But, again, I'm sort of happy to assume that there's a plan that by the time, the grand final's sort of run and done, that they'll be a lot clearer in their mind of which way they're going. And Brian Cook's going to be the CEO from, again, all reports. So, you know, what does he bring? Who does he bring? All those sort of things. So, and there will be a time where we deep dive onto Carlton, and hopefully it's this time next year when we're preparing for a grand final, which I'd like to think is very possible.
Okay, excellent. On that note, shall we get Rudy in?
It'd be rude not to.
1 minute, 37 seconds later.
Ben, as we alluded to, we're back with one of our favourite, we wouldn't even call him a guest, we call him the third co-host of this this little program. It is the great man, Rudy Edsel. Rudy, welcome back to the Magoos.
It's wonderful to be here, fellas. I have been calling myself the third Magoo for some time.
It makes perfect sense, and you were one of the very few people who, during our hiatus this year, sort of gave us a bit of a nudge along to make sure that we were at some stage planning out new content. So thank you for keeping us accountable, first of all.
Again, my pleasure. I just missed the content, that's all.
What's been happening, Rudy? We know you're I did discuss with Jake in an earlier episode that you managed to hook me in and make me come down to the Thornbury Bowls Club last season.
Yes, that's right. I did. I think you said, I can't remember what you said on one of my Instagrams. You said, actually, I think it might have even been on this podcast. You said that you're up for it, and I said I'd be targeting you like North targeting a vanilla midfielder, and I got you over the line like you're Jared Pollock, mate. It's so good to see you down there.
I'll probably have the output of Jared Pollock.
big raps. Don't let him talk himself down. Big raps around the club for Ben Franzini. It's they're sort of future. Yeah. Is it? There's a bit of Jason Horne Francis about him, mate. Really, really like really building around him already.
Oh, thanks, mate. I do. The way I see it is, I obviously don't play much sport anymore, footy and stuff. A few of those sort of injuries, but definitely still got that competitive drive. So bowls has been an absolute godsend in a way, because it was beautiful to play. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Anyone out there who actually just thinks about they wanted to play something like that, I couldn't recommend it highly enough. It's quite therapeutic, actually.
Yes. Jake, once you finish your cricket career and then you'll go on and have a couple of years playing for Geelong in the middle, I'll come after you then.
All right, brilliant. I mean, only if I can team up with you two guys, though, because I couldn't think of anyone else I'd rather play lawn bowls with, to be honest.
We can make that happen, Jake.
You've mentioned the Cats, Rudy, and, you know, you're our go-to man for all things Geelong, pretty much all things footy too, but it would be remiss of us to not start there. The Cats, there's many different ways you can look at it, I think. And I know that you're a man of great perspective when it comes to life in general. So it came to a disappointing end over last weekend in another preliminary final. How does it all sit with you?
Look, I was pretty philosophical about it because going into the game, I thought Geelong are going to get smoked here. I didn't see us losing by 14 goals because we basically never do that. But I did think that Melbourne were just far too good. And we were sort of like in the way of history a little bit. Like we were there to be pushed to the side. And that's fine. They're a better side than us at the moment, Melbourne. But I won't pretend it wasn't a bitter pill to swallow. Like we loaded up as hard as we possibly could for this season. And a couple of times during the year, I thought, it's going to happen. This is the year, 2021, pencil us in. And then, no, not so much as it turns out. I think that they may have overestimated how much adding blokes in their 30s to your list can help, judging on last year, because last year was very much a year for the veterans with the shorter season and the shorter games. And then it turns out that 22 games of 20-minute quarters, actually a huge amount for blokes in their 30s. And then by the time we got to the prelim, I think we had 11 blokes in their 30s. And then if you look at the two grand final sides, I think this is the first granny in 50 years without a single 200-game player. So therein lies the rub, my man. So, Cat just pulled the wrong rein, really. They were deleted from the finals, in a sense. They just, the game plan obliterated. I think they had 6 marks in the first quarter against Melbourne, and that's red lights flashing absolutely everywhere. And that's where it's at. They just, really, at the end of the day, they probably third or fourth, or, you know, a losing prelim is about where they're at if you look at the course of the season. Not as good as the top couple of teams and a fair bit better than the ones below.
And so, Ben, where do they – how come these guys aren't getting a game? How come Clark and, you know, Constable and Narkle, and they've obviously lost some guys that have gone to other clubs in that same sort of bracket? You know, the Clark seems like exactly what they need in their side, a bit of dash, a bit of speed, something that gives them a little bit extra. But is there something that, you know, us, you know, like non-devout Geelong watchers are missing? Why aren't these guys being, treated like the rest of the footy world, I guess, sort of seem to think that they are the answer and that they should be, but they're not getting the opportunity to be?
Well, I tell you what, if I knew the answer to that, I think I'd be on the coaching staff. I was pretty keen to see a bit more of Clark and Narkle, particularly Clark, because, like you said, he's got a point of difference, a bit of toe and a bit of pizzazz about him. Mm. He literally kicked a winner against Hawthorn this season, and so, you know, he's a bit of a darling of Cats fans. But then I guess the way they were playing their game plan, just a guy like that he doesn't work with that, I guess. He's, like you said, he's frenetic and he's fast and he's not controlled and trying to chip the ball around off the back half and wait and be patient. I guess that's why they weren't playing him. Also, like the last time he played against GWS, he had that really lazy-looking snap that, you know, like he should have kicked a goal from more or less directly in front from 15 out that would have cut the margin to 3, and then he lazily kicked the ball out of bounds. And I think that sort of showed where he was at with the club and where the club is at with him. And Narkle, I mean, I'd play him every single week. I absolutely love him, that kid. Constable is a different story. A pure inside midfielder is going to struggle to crack that midfield. I'm not sure why they're not trying the younger fellas. Part of the problem is I saw a tweet the other day that had like a breakdown of Geelong's list, and I've got 4 blokes between the ages of 24 and 27, and one of them was Narkle, I think, and going to leave. So there just isn't that band of, like, if you look at like I mentioned before, that there's no 200 game players in this coming granny. If you look at the best players for those sides, like Oliver's just turned 24, Petrarca's 25, Lever's 25, and then on the other side of the coin, you know, Bontempelli and those fellas all in that age bracket. That's the group you win flags from, not blokes in their 30s. So, they've pulled the wrong rein with age, I think is what it is. All the memes have come true, mate.
Yeah, And it's about time there's someone waiting for them to come true.
Yeah.
As obviously hindsight's such an easy thing to talk about, and yeah, Melbourne obviously were just way too good. So Geelong have obviously, as you said, you've thrown the kitchen sink at this year on trying to win it, and it hasn't worked. I mean, prelim is still, as a Carlton and Essendon supporter, I'd love to lose by 14 goals in a prelim. It means we won the final at least. But looking at, like, say, Collingwood in 18 and sort of what's happened after that with more from a list management perspective, contract-wise, similar thing where they've gone, we're in a window, let's sort of, you know, see what we can do, and that also didn't work. Where do you, I guess, see Geelong, is this the time that Geelong finally maybe drop off, or where do you actually see the next, not just next season, but in the next few years?
Next season, they basically have to have a crack again, I think. I can't see how they don't with their list. They've got no kids to play, really. And they're set up to have a crack. Like, they brought in Jeremy Cameron, and they'll still have at least one more, like, very serviceable year out of Patrick Dangerfield. And, I mean, Tom Hawkins is a two-time All-Australian. He's going to have ended the season kicking the most goals of anyone two times in a row. We brought Jeremy Cameron in, and Isaac Smith seems to be going pretty well. So, in good faith, you have to have a crack for those blokes again. I feel like there's not much point putting the queue in the rack. So next season they'll have another go. And then after that, Joel Selwood would look pretty slow the other night, and then those guys will be turning 35 after that. So after that, it's all bets are off, and I think there'll be a few years of serious pain for the Cats. There's a bit of talk about extending the window, which we did however many years ago it was, but you don't often get a guy like Patrick Dangerfield put his hand up and say, I want to come home. We basically need Clayton Oliver or Darcy Parrish to walk through the door in their free agency year for that to happen. And that's not going to happen this time around. And then they're also banking on the back of a couple of generational blokes in Selwood and Hawkins. So they had another crack left in them there. I don't think that's going to happen again. And I think they have to bottom out a couple of years after that. They simply have to. It's this kind of they've managed to make this more sustainable on the back of, like I said, like some seriously elite talent, which there just isn't any on the list at the moment, like in the age group coming up.
So something that I want to ask you and I want to talk about is that, does the fact they haven't won a premiership, does that make it unsuccessful, or is it because is it a successful era because they've won, at a hazard, I guess, you know, 75%, 85% of their games over the last 10 years? Is it still a success? Have you enjoyed it enough without a flag to tick off what they've done and sort of how they're going about it? Knowing that, I mean, you know, Jeremy Cameron's 26, 27, Guthrie just signed a four-year deal, so there's still going to be bones around it. And what I think Geelong might also be doing, if they can keep onto these guys, is that they'll have ready-made players stepping in. That's like they've sort of said to potentially Constable and Clark and those sort of guys, like if please put will overpay or whatever they're doing, they're saying stay until you're 23, 24, and then it's all yours for 8 years, because these guys are obviously seemingly going to go off the cliff all at once. So, is there a grand plan that, you know, a club like Geelong won't potentially bottom out and will always be a destination club, and has the last decade, still scratched the itch as far as being a footy fan's concerned?
To answer the second question first, there'll always be an element of blokes wanting to come home or being attracted to the lifestyle. That actually goes back as far as Gary Senior. He played a few games for Hawthorn, and then he went and played for Myrtleford or something like that. And then Geelong lured him back, and they were like, look, you don't have to live in Melbourne. Like, there's a pretty good lifestyle down here. So that will always be attractive to a certain type of bloke who, you know, say a Jeremy Cameron type who loves to go fishing. So that will always be there. And they'll probably always keep the Cats there or thereabouts, I suppose. But at some point they're going to have to go down. And to answer your first question about success, look, they had to do it, really. like I mentioned, Dangerfield came and he pretty much single-handedly yanked the premiership window back open. So I owed him the respect of having a crack at that point. And like, I don't begrudge him that. I've like, it's almost like following like a really good European soccer team, and like you have a home game and you know you're going to win nine times out of 10. Mm. You can't ask much more as a fan, really. You know, maybe one flag in the last out of the last 10. I suppose this is probably the first year where it's really like I haven't had that much fun though, just purely as a fan. Like I've loved the season in general, but Geelong have been very frustrating. And partially it's because actually watching them can be quite difficult at times. I'm sure you guys have found that. Like, you know, we had that game against Collingwood midway through the season that was just like, you know, like everyone knew Geelong was going to win before that game was played. But then it was so difficult to watch. And there was one against Gold Coast and Geelong that was the same. There was a couple of games where the first night, the time that we beat Richmond this year and we like beat them by 10 goals, I was like, I was just having so much fun. And I was like, this is the best, this is the best Geelong team I've ever watched. And I was so up and about. And when we beat West Coast by 15 goals, but a lot of the time it's like, a lot of the time this year, it was a bit like pulling teeth in a sense. It was like, you knew Geelong were going to win and you knew they were going to make it hard to watch. But overall I think it has scratched the itch, Jake, to be honest. I don't think they're 100% over yet, but it's been not too many fans of teams can say they've watched their mob make 11 of the last 14 prelims or whatever, you know, whatever that number is. So it's been awesome.
And I mean, yeah, may well not be over yet. They seemingly always have something up their sleeve. What's going to happen with the coach? Is he, you know, seemingly for a guy who's probably got one of the greatest records, you know, he's in home and away, I would suggest it's probably one of the very best, seemingly still draws a lot of negative attention when, you know, they don't win the flag, which probably just shows how hard it is to actually do. Do you think that he's extended, he stays, he goes? What's the gut feel from the ear to the ground, Geelong rusted on?
Well, Geelong fans really can't cop him. I think they sort of semi or outright blame him for not winning a couple of flags along this journey. I think that I was having this discussion with a colleague today. I think in most other sports, this is probably where you do move on the coach and bring in some fresh ideas because you've got a good play, you know, you've got a playing group that looks like it needs it. But I don't think that they'll do that here in the AFL. There's some murmurings around coaches moving on. Matthew Knights already has. Corey Enright, I think, is a chance to go. So maybe they'll move those around him and see what happens. But I don't think he'll be. I'd be surprised if he moved on. The only way I could see it possibly happening is if he got the personal tap on the shoulder. If Brian Cook takes over as CEO as Carlton, and if he personally goes to Scotty or Scotty personally goes to him and says, and let's get this done. But I don't reckon it will, to be honest. Like, I'd be very surprised if Chris Scott was coaching anywhere but Geelong next season.
Fair call. Yeah, cool. A lot of hard-hitting questions, and I'm loving the honesty as well, which is great. But
it's hard to honestly, man. It's hard to get. There's not many really level-headed discussions you can have about the Cats, like with Cats fans or non-Cats fans. Like I've listened to you over the last couple of weeks, Ben, and you can't cop them. You didn't want them to win any of the. You wanted them going out the finals in straight sets, and I get that. Like people are sick to death of the Cats, and like I said, they were tough to watch this year. I understand, but you just can't. There's just no one can. It's really hard to have a level-headed conversation about it.
It is, and I've been, and it's interesting because Jake's actually been one non-Geelong supporter who is a
hugely
hard
on him. Yeah,
really on him, which makes for a good discussion because it'd be easy.
Probably also means that's exactly why they lose every single year. every single year.
But it is good to have that. Otherwise, it would just be a Geelong beat up kind of show.
And
it's that category, and it's a bit of column A, column B, being there for ages. And honestly, from my perspective, has been really boring. And as you said, like, I want the two most exciting teams to be playing on Grand Final day. And I personally think, even though Port might have a better list than the Dogs, I think the Dogs, in terms of ticker, we probably do have the best two teams in it.
Yeah, I reckon the Dogs have got the better list than Port. To be honest, I was like, I actually thought when the Dogs won, I was like, well, we've actually probably got the two best teams of the season in the granny. And they were 1-2 for most of the season. And I was a bit worried about Port facing up to that Melbourne team. I thought they might have been lambs to the slaughter, but the Dogs look schmick.
Yeah, I'm bloody excited. Who you got? Who you got for the granny?
Yeah, I think maybe the Dogs, to be honest. It just seems to be, like, everything seems to be falling into their corner, doesn't it? Like, Steph Martin's come back and he's a ruckman that wins flags. Like, it's, you don't often see, like, the wiry bloke win a flag, you know, like a wiry ruck. You rarely see that. And they just seem to be cherry ripe. And obviously Bevo's got them, you know, singing a song. He clearly thrives in the back against the wall, us against them scenario. They've won it from here before. And also, like, Melbourne will be fine as well. If they don't win this flag, they've got plenty left in their future, because that list is frighteningly good and young.
Yeah. 100%. Rudy?
He's just come on and he's just picked us apart. He's just shown our, he just shows us the way that it should be done, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And when we get Rudy involved, he is a man who brings this show to new levels. So we won't have you on all the time, because then we just couldn't possibly live up to that standard. But it's been great for us to see you, because we're obviously sitting on Zoom, you get the visual experience as well as the audio experience that the audience are getting. But thank you for once again jumping on. You certainly are the third Magoo, and we do appreciate all the support over the journey. And I sort of hope that your grand final prediction comes to light. And I would suggest that there's something left in the Cats story also too. So thank you, mate. Stay well. Look after yourself. And no doubt the Magoo's community will be hearing from you soon.
Indeed. Thanks, boys.
The Magoo's.
Benny, another action-packed episode. Great to have Rudy back on, which we absolutely love to hear from the great man, and he's all over it for you and all things Geelong too. So thanks again, Rudy, for joining us. Hey, big week next week, Ben. It'll be the grand final show. It feels like just a couple of weeks ago we started this, and now it's the grand final already. So we've got a couple of diehards lined up to join us and chat everything the big game. You'll get our tips as well, which I know is huge, and we'll dive into the Brownlow Medal as well, which will have been awarded. Ben, do you have one? Do you have one that you might think get up in the Brownlow?
I reckon my man Parrish might surprise a couple. But
I disagree entirely. He won't win the Brownlow.
I've said this last year. I think that it takes a player a year to get recognised, and then they start. The umpires go, oh, actually, maybe we should have been looking at this guy a bit more. So maybe not Parrish. I think Petrarca. I think he kicks goals. He wins games. God, he looks good at the moment too. He's in good nick.
Mm. Yeah, I think Bontempelli will win the Brownlow. But there you go. So two teams that are still in the hunt there. No surprise. Big show next week. Make sure you're joining for all your pre-grand final entertainment. Make sure to follow us on the socials. Get around us all wherever you can. If you're listening to us, share it to your Instagram story. It can go a long way. Thank you to everyone who did that this week. And keep an eye out for future episodes and a bit more fun on the socials coming shortly.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. I might even have a plant for you next week. Who knows? I'm feeling like I want a bit of a huge plant in my life.
The green thumb, Ben Franzini. Thank you, mate. You've been great.
Cheers, mate.
The Magoo's. The Magoo's. The Magoo's. The Magoo's. The Magoo's.